The Tom Woods Show, episode 2146.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. I'm giving away three free courses from my Liberty Classroom. One of them is ex-Marxist Michael Rechtenwald teaching you about critical theory so you can understand leftism and fight it better, as well as our course on how Alexander Hamilton screwed up America and the history of the conservative and libertarian movements. Check it out at 3freecourses.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. The great filmmaker Jason Rink is back with us again today. It wasn't too long ago that he did back-to-back episodes on The Tom Woods Show, but with January 6th in the news once again because of the hearings, I wanted to talk to Jason, who's been following all of this very closely, just about what it all means and whether any of it matters and why the regime is so preoccupied with it. A lot of things to talk about today. Jason, welcome back.
Tom, glad to be back on. Talking about my favorite subject.
Yes, I know. Of course, you're the only person I could even dream of having on this subject. I mean, I know there are other people, but doggone it, I've known you forever. And now, whether you like it or not, your name's associated with, you know, Stop the Steal and January 6th and a whole lot of things now that I bet you didn't expect you'd be associated with all those years ago.
Yeah, I'm violating the 3x5 card of acceptable discussion, Tom. You know,
I've taken
some tips from you. So
yeah, but honestly, I mean, you make me look like a wimp compared to the stuff you do. Oh my goodness. And you're just so good at it too. I remember all those years ago when you did the nullification documentary, how great that came out. And you've only gotten better and sharper and more skilled since then. I'm really happy that you've had the success you've had, even though you've had a lot of struggles too, as we talked about on the show in the past.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's been interesting that I attended the events on January 6th. I was producing a documentary at the time, happened to find myself there in DC when January 6th went down. And, you know, none of us expected it to become what it became. So there I was documenting it. And I will say, I did take off my documentarian hat when the decision came for me on whether or not I was going to go up to and into the Capitol. The documentarian in me wanted to do that, but the guy in his 40s with a family and thinking about the possible repercussions is what kept me from doing that. And, you know, I'm thankful that that's the case. And so I'm here free, not being interrogated or sitting in a jail cell for attending a constitutionally protected event on January 6th.
You know, I know somebody personally who's awaiting sentencing for this.
Wow.
And he said, and you probably know who it is, or you might know who it is, but he said that they were hearing some word that an old man was being beaten up by the police or something like that. And so he went in to look at that. So we all went out for dinner. His daughter, my daughter, Jenna, we all, four of us went out for dinner maybe 6 months ago. And my daughter was just expressing her outrage that this was happening to him.
Yeah.
And I was very, it was very interesting to me that he said to her, well, it should be said, I did go in there and I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Now, even at this late, even after everything they've done to him, even after the solitary confinement, everything else they did, and I managed to get him legal representation, and he said, I'm convinced that without that, I would still be in solitary confinement. Even he still could say, well, you know, I shouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
He's a more honorable guy than I am. I'd be denouncing everybody at every turn.
Well, you know, and for some of these defendants who've actually gone through the process, they want them to do nothing short of disavowing all of their beliefs to say, you know, I no longer am a Trump supporter. Joe Biden is the duly elected president. I pledge my allegiance to him. Like, they really want to break some of these people and get it on record before they sentence them, you know? And some of these people have had to do that. It's just been crazy. So it's like, even his like little recognition of having done something possibly wrong or violated the law, that may not be enough for him to avoid the serious consequences. I hope that he does. And there's a lot of injustice going on around this right now. So
yeah, absolutely. Can we start off with you, especially for the maybe 18 to 20% of the audience that's actually outside the United States, could you just give us like a 60 to 90 second run through the skeleton of the actual events that occurred on that day, just the basics, and then we'll go into it?
Yeah, certainly. So I was there with a documentary team following the Stop the Steal movement with Ali Alexander and some of the other people who were involved in that. And so the events of the day of January 6th was that it was going to be this speech, essentially the last speech of Trump's presidency, was going to happen over on one part of the property over there called the Ellipse. And then about a mile and a quarter from there is where the Capitol was or is. And so there's a 500,000 or more people in attendance in DC. And as Trump was wrapping up his speech, he made a statement, you know, I'm going to go to the Capitol with you guys, you know, walk over there. We're going to go to the Capitol. And when that happened, that was unexpected. People didn't expect him to say that. There was nothing planned. You know, the Secret Service would never have allowed Trump to just waltz over there, you know, with a group of 500,000 people. And lo and behold, everybody walked over there. There was going to be some speeches happening on a permitted stage on the lawn, but that never happened because once people got over there, the barricades were easily breached. There was very little law enforcement there. And when you had thousands and thousands of people just flowing over to the Capitol with that kind of security, it just was a matter of time before people were all over the scaffoldings, prepping for the inauguration, coming up to the doors, creating a brouhaha, and eventually getting inside the Capitol. And that those are the images that everybody's seen. So that's really how it went down over the course of several hours from about 12:30 in the afternoon till a few hours later is when sort of the Capitol riots occurred.
Now, you, of course, are familiar with the questioning that Congressman Thomas Massie did to the, I guess, the FBI about how many people, FBI assets or anybody involved in any way with the FBI was present on January 6th, 5th through 6th, and, you know, may have in some way been involved. And of course, we're all curious about who this Ray Epps is. And I've heard it said, oh, well, they, you know, they say that he's nothing. Well, okay, well, I'm going to need a little bit more than that. We have this guy, Ray Epps, on video repeatedly saying that tomorrow we need to go into the Capitol. He says this over and over again. The other people present are all yelling Fed at him because nobody wants to do that. It all seems extremely weird. Apparently, when push came to shove, he himself didn't go in. So what the heck was all this about? So I'm curious, just because you were there, you were actually present. Did you hear any talk of anybody saying we need to breach the threshold of the building and go in, and when and how that developed? Did you get a sense of at what moment it just kind of spiraled out of control?
Well, you know, what I've said before is I actually had the privilege or the inside track to have been on a January 4th planning call going over the events of the day with many, many people who have since been implicated in this sort of insurrection plot. I was listening in on it. And I have said and maintained always that that call was very boring, by the way, because people were talking about now there are no generators allowed on the property, you know, there would be very few bathrooms. Here's what you're going to, like, it was all logistics about how to manage a crowd and get people from one speech to the next. And nothing on that call was ever about that. Nobody was talking about that. And so the breaching of the Capitol and going into the Capitol wasn't something I ever heard of. And I've also said this, that it was actually not supported by a lot of the Stop the Steal leaders because they were hoping that inside the Capitol, the Senate and the House would object to these electoral votes. And so they wanted regular business to occur that day and that the rally outside was really just to show the voice of the people in support of that, you know, what they believe was a constitutional process of possibly not accepting those electors. And so the breach of the Capitol and the events of Jan 6 actually undermined many, many weeks and months of work that the Stop the Steal organizers and many of the representatives and senators who got on board with this. People don't realize this, but there was, I think, 100 representatives who were all had agreed to object to the electoral votes in there and a handful of senators. And so that was a lot of work that then went down the drain essentially because of the bad actors who ended up causing the ruckus that occurred. And the question about, did this start from federal instigators, you know, agents, things like this? It's a really good question. It hasn't been answered. And one thing I want to say on this is that, and these are all things you're not going to hear in the January 6th hearings that are going on right now. But one thing that many people don't know is that you recall that there was this Gretchen Whitmer plot to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan earlier in 2020. And it's been revealed that there was a lot of federal informants in that plot. It was almost a dozen out of 18 people. Well, what many people don't know is that the guy running the Detroit office of the FBI was then promoted to the DC office in October of 2020 and was running the DC office of the FBI when January 6th happened. So roughly 60 days prior to January 6th or 90 days prior to January 6th, the guy who ran the op that was full of feds to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer to generate these headlines and all of these things in the run-up to the election is then put over the DC office. I think that's very, very suspicious.
Wow, well, that is extremely suspicious because therefore we know that this isn't the sort of guy who ethically could not take part in something like this or that the thought to be an instigator would never occur to him.
Yeah, right. Yeah. His name is Stephen D'Antuono. If people look it up, they'll find this out. And so it's like,
well, you know, as a matter of fact, this is actually small potatoes compared to a plot to kidnap the governor.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, just going into a building is no big deal compared to that. So you definitely can't put it past him.
Yeah. And, you know, back to the Ray Epps thing, you know, Ray Epps is one of the only people on camera multiple times encouraging people to go in the Capitol. And Ray Epps has never been arrested. He was removed from the FBI wanted list. Of course, the committee, who they have interviewed 1,000 people at this point, over 1,000 people, they claim that they interviewed Ray Epps behind closed doors, of course, and that there's nothing to see here. And that's why, you know, he's been released. And Adam Kitzinger essentially, I think, basically calls Ray Epps a hero of some sort, you know.
Yeah, we thank Ray Epps and all that. And
I mean,
the unbelievable hatred they have for everybody else. And yet here's the guy actually telling them to do it. And they're saying, yeah, we talked to him. Seems cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And Tom, what most people don't really understand is the scope of this committee hearing investigation. I mean, thousands of witnesses questioned, many subpoenaed, hundreds of thousands of documents. They have access to the 14,000 hours of surveillance footage that's never been released. Okay. So they've been able to look over all of that. And so they've subpoenaed footage from independent journalists and documentary filmmakers. I've not been subpoenaed, but their star witness of the first day of the hearings was a guy named Nick Quested, who I had dinner with. We had conversations with. I've met the guy. He turned over footage to them and cooperated with them. So the extent of their pursuit here has been large. And so when you look at things that are being omitted from the hearings, you look at things like Ray Epps, you look at things like federal agents, you look at the question about the pipe bombs. You know, there was 2 pipe bombs supposedly found at the RNC and DNC that were planted there on the 5th, I think is what they say. And it's turned out that Kamala Harris was in the DNC building. She wasn't in the Capitol. So you've got a possible pipe bomber, quote unquote, that they have still not captured. They still don't know who this person is, that essentially put a bomb outside the building of the incoming vice president and a sitting senator. That has not been covered. They're not talking about that. What they're talking about is, you know, essentially making their case that, quote, Trump led a coordinated multi-step effort to overturn the 2020 presidential election with this planned riot and insurrection. And they're just doubling down on that. And in the meantime, they're brushing aside any little things that get in the way of pursuing that narrative.
Yeah, isn't that interesting about the pipe bomb? So do you really think it's a question of this whole thing is secondary? We really just want to get Trump, and that's why they don't care. But couldn't they just put some underling, like some backbencher on the pipe bomb story?
Yeah, right, 100%. I mean, it's like we've gotten one grainy photo of some guy in a hoodie that all they have. And it's like they used cell phone tracking data to round up people in the first couple of days. The other thing that I'd have you know is that one of the head guys of the Department of Justice, shortly after Jan 6, he went on 60 Minutes and he said, listen, we went into a shock and awe style roundup. We wanted to get everybody we could prior to the inauguration to scare people so they wouldn't come out to the inauguration. And we started with the internet celebrities. He's come out and said this. So it's like they went after anybody they could get that was a big name. They, you know, they wanted to make sure Roger Stone and Alex Jones and Alexander and Nick Fuentes and all these guys were like, those are the guys they were going to round up or do something with. And yet you've got a real potential threat, you know, of this pipe bomb that nobody knows who it is. They haven't closed that case and they've just sort of forgotten about it. And it's like, yeah, can't they put some other resources on that? Can't they put some other resources or at least tell us about any undercover agents and informants? There's a big question about the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys that hasn't been answered. And so, you know, you're not going to hear this stuff in these hearings that are going on right now, though, I can tell you that.
Yeah, you've been doing us a great service by live streaming your commentary with those hearings going on, because yeah. I definitely don't think I could stand to watch them, honestly.
Well, that's the one thing that's interesting is, you know, the first night of the hearings, you know, they got a primetime slot for this. They don't have another primetime slot until the last day of the hearings, whenever that is. And so, you know, they wanted this first hearing to be like a big deal. You know, wow, 8 p.m. or whatever, Eastern time, going to go for a couple hours. And boy, was that a snoozer. I mean, we got to hear 30 minutes from Liz Cheney and, you know, 30 minutes from somebody else. And then they brought in two witnesses. And then they basically just showed selectively edited content in order to build their case. In fact, they even showed a clip during that hearing that was one of the famous Ray Epps clips, but they zoomed in on it so that he was not in the frame.
he's the story. The story of the video.
Yeah, so it's like, oh, okay, we see where this is going. And then the filmmaker that they had who showed up there, this guy named Nick Quested, well, I had seen footage that he had shared with me that, you know, it's some of the same footage shared with me privately. Some people have reported since then, and we noticed this, that they didn't use some of the most interesting footage. I mean, he had footage of Ashley Babbitt's being carried away that they didn't show. He had footage of Roseanne Boylan, another person who died that day, having chest compressions done on her and, you know, some things that would lead to believe that she was trampled by Capitol Police. And so they had some really, really great shocking and, you know, news-making footage they could have shown that night on their primetime audience. But they actually said, here's our big bombshell. We have aerial footage from the Capitol. Oh, great. You know, where's the other 13,000 hours of footage that you guys have? We'd love to see it. So it's been a real letdown. And honestly, I don't see it doing what they think it's going to do, which is they want to run on Jan 6 because they don't have anything else to run on in the midterms. And I think they can convince the American people like this was 9/11, the next Pearl Harbor. But so far, it's been a snooze fest with not a whole lot going on.
Hey folks, quick message from Ole Woods here. If you are looking to add Bitcoin to your retirement account and thinking about the long haul, then the best and easiest way to do that is with BitTrust IRA. BitTrust IRA helps you seamlessly and securely add cryptocurrency to your portfolio. It stores your private keys in nuclear bunkers with military-grade encryption. They have a 24/7 trading platform with no minimum investments and unlimited trades, plus a team to help guide you along the way if you have any questions. They also offer the lowest trading fees in the industry. I've often said that if Bitcoin is ever to gain more widespread acceptance, it's going to have to be more user-friendly, and BitTrust IRA could not be easier to use. So go to bittrustira.com/woods today to learn more. And for a limited time, BitTrust IRA is waiving the sign-up fee for Tom Woods Show listeners, a $50 value. That's bittrustira.com/woods, bittrustira.com/woods. I sometimes think about a plucky young historian 100 years from now, thinking, I think I'm going to specialize in early 21st century American history and digging through the documents and realizing almost nothing Americans think happened actually happened.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's this or COVID or the Iraq War or the 2008 downturn, which had no cause. I mean, you know, what is happening here? Nothing people have been led to believe is actually the truth. There's a great book idea that I'll say right now, because I'm too lazy to do it. I've done enough books. But there really is a good book to be written, The Secret History of 21st Century America.
Yeah.
You know? And it's all out there in plain sight. It's not really a secret, but it's a secret to a lot of Americans who have never been exposed to it. there is a counter-establishment story to be told that some talented young scholar should get out there and tell.
Yeah, and you know, Tom, your listeners and yourself and those of us who are around and, you know, Ron Paul's 07-08 campaign and people who've been on this beat longer than me, you know, when it comes to if the government's lying to us, if the media is parroting the talking points of, you know, the Department of Justice or the CIA, you know, like, we're not surprised by a lot of this stuff. I mean, it was epidemic. It's been epidemic for decades. But I think what some of us are actually surprised with is the level of brazenness that's happened over the last several years, where it's almost like they don't care.
It's almost like they relish it because it gives them like a special kick to be so brazen right before our very eyes to the point where anybody with a pulse knows they're lying to us. So they know that we know they're lying to us. Yeah, they know there are a lot of dopes who are just going to go along with everything they say. They're no fun at all. It's terrorizing or attempting to terrorize people like you and me with sheer falsehood after falsehood after falsehood just because they can.
Yeah. Well, and this leads me to remember the Time Magazine article that was published in February 2021 after Biden was, you know, inaugurated. Time Magazine runs this huge article called The Secret History of the Shadow Campaign that saved the 2020 election. And in there, they really talk about a lot of the things that happened in order to, quote unquote, fortify democracy and prevent Trump from having a second term. And in a way, it reads like a confession. You know, that really a lot of us who were following the Stop the Steal movement were like, wait, this is a lot of the stuff that we were talking about. They're coming out and talking about it. And so it was very curious when that happened, but it is like, yeah, to a certain degree, it seems like they just want to brag about it. They recognize how powerful that they are or think they are in being able to shape cultural opinion. And there's so many just NPCs, people who just are going to swap in the Ukraine flag for the mask or whatever it is and follow along the new narrative. So it really is, on one hand, it's disheartening because I've realized, like you have over the last several years, how quickly many, many people will fall in line with the regime narrative. On the other hand, I think there's more people than ever who just don't buy it anymore.
Yeah, that's true. And I think there are more people than ever who are willing to listen to out of the mainstream people. And out of the mainstream, it's so ridiculous because that makes us sound like we're the weirdos. You and I are the normal people. Like, yeah, it's unbelievable right. To me that Anderson Cooper is the mainstream, you know? Like, yeah. You know, Don Lemon, whoever these people are, that they're the mainstream. What? Mainstream of what? Like, they're all, in fact, Eric Brakey, he's running for state senate in Maine. He's a former Maine state senator, had a great tweet the other day. He said, now, in this day and age, I don't know, I forget it was, he said, he used CNN and I don't know if it was CNN and Alex Jones or CNN, who's contrasting two different outlets. And he said, he may have said something like, Alex Jones is where you go for the real news and CNN is where you go for outlandish conspiracy theories.
Right.
Now, I don't remember if it was Alex. I don't remember what the thing was, but the point is you see what the contrast is. So, but let me ask you this though. What exactly was, I don't see how we can know the answer, but what was the end game of the people who did go quote unquote, into the Capitol. Because of course, we're told that their end game was to overthrow the regime, to prevent the peaceful transfer of power. I don't see how they could possibly have accomplished this. So yeah. It looks to me like they had no end game. They were just some ruffians who were just, you know, screwing off, right? Or just screwing around.
Yeah. And you know, there's been a lot of footage that's leaked out since then. And the main film that we're working on about January 6th that we intend to have completed this year, it's taken a lot longer, it's called Q Sent Me. People can check it out at qsentmemovie.com, but it follows the journey of the Q shaman, Jacob Chansley, who we got the only interview with him that he gave it on the morning of January 7th there in DC. We sat with him, we got his whole story, and then he was arrested 2 days later and he's been in jail. He's serving 41 months right now for a felony of interrupting Congress. And one of the things that really struck me when we interviewed him was it was before the footage started coming out. And he maintained, he said, yeah, no, we were let in. The door was opened. I went into the Senate. I led a prayer. You know, he's like telling me all these things that I'm like, wait, what happened? You, lo and behold, the footage starts to come out days and weeks later. And I'm like, well, there's Jake. Oh, yeah. Oh, there he is leading a prayer in the Senate. Okay, that's bizarre. Oh, he's just like waltzing down the aisle. And so I believe that from the beginning, many people have maintained some of those things to be true. I was on the outside. I've said from the beginning that what it looked like from my perspective was the insurrection is written by National Lampoon, you know, his Animal House, because there was just people sort of hanging out on the, you know, waving big flags, you know, trolling, whatever. And on the inside, you had a lot of people that were just wandering around. It was sort of like the dog that caught the car, right? Okay, we made it in. Now what? Oh, we're just a bunch of boomers with no weapons. And, you know, what do we do now? Okay. And so I think that it's just a situation where in any group that size, you're going to have some sort of infiltration. You're going to have some bad actors. I do think it was a combination of some bad actors and the FBI or government trying to spur things on to create an environment. The lack of law enforcement created an opportunity for the breach to occur as it did. And so I don't think that the people who went in necessarily were planning to overthrow anything. I think, like a lot of people, they'd never been in the Capitol before. They're like, oh, wow, yeah, we can go in here. And so I think it had a lot to do with just the psychology of groups. And at the end of the day, one thing people forget is that the Senate convened several hours later and finished the business of the day. That's not something you can say about courthouses that were torched in, you know, Seattle. That's not something you could say about many of the things that we saw happening during the summer of rioting that preceded it through BLM. And so it's like, they met and they still carried out business in that building. It wasn't razed, you know, it wasn't destroyed. And so I don't know what the end game was, but I think a lot of people just, it was harmless. They went in there, took selfies, walked around and left. And six trained Blackwater people could have taken and held the Capitol that day. And yet tens of thousands of Trump supporters without weapons and without a plan weren't able to really do much.
Now, you've been watching these hearings. Let's suppose there were going to be hearings, but Jason Rink was going to be the key person deciding what exactly would be discussed, what witnesses would be called, what footage would be shown. How would the hearings be different?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I was contacted by the January 6th committee. They wanted me to voluntarily surrender my footage to them. My legal counsel told them that's not going to happen. They never followed up with a subpoena. And I don't think I would have been the type of person they would have trotted in there. But had they, I would have talked about a lot of the things I've shared here, which is the...
What I mean is if you were actually arranging the hearings.
Oh,
like you
right.
You can call anybody you want and you can talk about any topic you want.
Yeah.
How would the hearings, what would they look like?
Well, listen, I think what I would start with is partially what they did, which is, see, the foundation of their case is that the election was the most secure election in history. That's their words. Right? The establishment wants us to believe that the 2020 presidential elections, they've never been more secure. And so my belief is that it's very easy to demonstrate that that isn't actually true. I don't actually have to demonstrate that Trump was duly elected, that Biden, you know, stole the election. I just have to establish to you that it wasn't the most secure. In fact, that it was possibly one of the least secure based on policies that were implemented and used under the guise of COVID, the weakening of chain of custody, a lot of very basic election type things that I think are very demonstrable to show people that this wasn't the most secure election in history. Once you establish that, because what they are trying to do in this hearing is they're trying to show that Trump knew the election was fine, that he lost, that there was no problems. Bob Barr says so as well. These appointed Republican judges threw his cases out. That means that there's no merit to it. And they want to use that as the basis then to make January 6th what it was, that none of these questions have merit. So that's the pretext. So what I would do is I would take the opportunity to not explore the most crazy conspiracy theories about Dominion voting machines and like white hat secret agents in Europe, you know, that were somehow trying to preserve the election or whatever. Like, I would take some of the most basic information. I would call people like Matt Brainerd, who did some of the most election data work, the best data work out there. I would probably talk to some of the other filmmakers who were there, like a guy named Taylor Hansen, who actually filmed Ashley Babbitt's murder and has maintained that the Jan 6 committee doesn't want to put him up there. They don't want to use his footage. So I would be contacting those people. And then I would also be bringing in people like Ali Alexander and letting him talk. Ali was organizing the Stop the Steal campaigns. They're not bringing him in. They'd question him behind closed doors, but they won't put him on television. So I would do that alongside the people that we're seeing now, the ones who are giving the regime narrative. I'm okay with giving the regime narrative in a hearing that's in pursuit of the truth, but I would counterbalance that with the other people who have not changed their stories, who've also not been accused of crimes, who say, hey, there's a lot to this story that you don't know. People who are on the ground, who are on the phone calls, people who have already testified under oath before the committee. That's what I would do. So you would see a lot of different people in there that would be pushing into these other angles. Bring somebody like Julie Kelly in there, who's done a lot of great reporting on it. Darren Beatty of Revolver.News. All of these outlets that the Ministry of Truth would like to have banned from the internet, I would be bringing those up.
You know, it almost makes me think it would have been fun if somebody, you know, with a big studio and stuff had actually been able to arrange a counter hearing.
Yeah.
You know, for exactly the same time slot where you look at real footage, you look at, you know, that when Ray Epps is in it, you don't block him out. You actually look at him.
Yeah.
Or we bring on some of the people who have been gathering information about this. We bring on somebody like you and have a counter hearing. I think from now on, we should think about trying to do something like that. So that while the, you know, everybody wants to watch whoever these, you know, these creeps are can do that, but at the same time we'll have our own thing. And by the way, I think that's something that the Libertarian Party, the new version of the Libertarian Party, could distinguish itself by promoting something like that, saying, okay, if you're a dissident and you don't want to be subjected to this, we have an alternative for you, and it would be this huge live stream thing. So anyway, I'm just thinking out loud.
Well, and I just want to say one quick thought on that too, Tom, is that, you know, one thing that's gotten really swept under the rug or nobody's even paid attention or even knows about is that there are a number of states where people have looked into the election results, and they also determined that, in fact, Joe Jorgensen's votes were shifted in some cases in some of these places. And it's gotten no news because the amount of votes she got total was not much. But there is some evidence that the Libertarian candidates have been used in the past and in 2020 as a bit of a slush fund of votes that nobody will notice one way or another if those things get shifted to a different candidate. And so I really think that the LP should be more in front of the election integrity issue because so much rides on it for them. I mean, if they are actually trying to break that 1% vote barrier, the first thing they'd want to do is make sure that everything is above board and that all of their work for ballot access actually produces a result. So, you know, it's just interesting when you mention that. I'm like, yeah, I do think the LP should be on the forefront of some of this stuff.
Right.
But we haven't seen that.
Maybe that'll change. Obviously, we know the reason they haven't been. We know the reason is that that issue is one of those issues that, well, for the Libertarian Party, it's not just the like half a dozen issues that you absolutely can't touch because the establishment won't like you. For the Libertarian Party, there were like 300 issues they wouldn't touch.
I mean,
they don't even want to be on the outskirts of being disliked by the New York Times. You know?
Yeah,
and the
exactly.
thing is, when push comes to shove, the New York Times is going to hate them anyway. So it doesn't even accomplish anything. But yeah, it would be nice to see them talk about things that, because who cares? Anybody who's going to dislike the Libertarian Party for that already disliked them and was never going to like them.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing that I've embraced, Tom. I know you've embraced this as well. As you know, I had another film that has just gotten canceled from Freedom Fest, the Anthem Film Festival there, because it tells a story about a guy nobody likes and people don't mind that his due process and free speech rights have been curtailed by the government. And in that process of getting that banned, you know, some of the regime libertarian types are the ones that were involved in getting that banned. And what I realized was that, listen, I'm going to be called a white supremacist. I'm going to be called an insurrectionist. Like, people who don't like me are going to attach toxic titles and names and to me and try to hamstring what I'm doing or try to get people to ignore me. That's just what's going to happen. If you're doing anything provocative at all, if you're challenging the regime at all, you got to recognize that people who are adjacent to the regime are going to throw you under the bus. So you can either embrace that and say, look, I don't care. And this doesn't even warrant my response, really. Or we can live in fear that we're going to be labeled something by groups of people and individuals who didn't like us, don't want us around. And at the end of the day, if they could send us to Guantanamo Bay in boxcars, they would.
Right. I think of my audience, my potential audience, as the tens of millions of people who look at the world differently from the regime and who don't trust it and who are actively seeking people who are going to give them an interesting, challenging alternative.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to appeal to certain wings of the libertarian movement, which these people would die 1,000 deaths before saying anything actually unpopular. The most unpopular they get is when they repeat platitudes from current gender theory. Well, that's not unpopular. That's the most popular thing in the world right now, at least with the establishment it is, you know, but that's not my natural constituency. So if they're going to attack me, the kind of people I'm trying to appeal to would look at those attacks and say, oh, this guy must be interesting. These are not the kind of people who would look at the attacks and say, oh, he sounds dangerous, or he sounds like he's a bad guy. No. They are smart enough to know that that's what happens. And incidentally, at this point, if I hear some bad accusation about somebody I know or have heard of, I just assume it's false. At this point, I assume it's false, or there's probably some explanation. I'll give you an example. Mike Cernovich. Okay, now Mike Cernovich is not liked by a lot of people.
Yep.
And he has things that have been said about him that you just wouldn't believe. I mean, it makes me look like nothing.
Right.
I'm almost ashamed of myself when I look at all the things that have been said about Mike Cernovich. And yet he still prospers. He's still doing really well financially. He's got massive influence. He's got massive influence on Twitter. Even he's had to block a lot of people on Twitter, but he doesn't care. He just does that. I look at some of the things that he's accused of saying or doing, and I say, I'm not quite sure what he meant by that, but I'm sure if I asked him, there'd be some explanation. I mean, that's exact. I don't dwell on it for a second. I bet if I asked him, he would just tell me. You know, I'm not for a second do I think, wait a minute, the regime doesn't, the Southern Poverty Law Center doesn't like him, so he must be bad. If that's the way you're thinking, you have brain damage.
Yeah, and now it's easy, Tom, because the regime is just producing an easy list of people for us to follow on social media, consume their podcasts. Whoever's on the unapproved list, that's who I'm subscribing to. And so they're actually doing us a service. It's really incredible.
Yeah, I know it. Well, QSentMeMovie.com is a key link here that people should go visit and sign up to find about your documentary.
Yeah, and then I'll also say I've been writing and putting content out along with our podcast at cancelproof.substack.com. I have a Substack called Cancel Proof. And you'll see some of the things that are happening here. I tell the whole story about how I was canceled from Freedom Fest this year. I will still be out in Vegas during Freedom Fest. We are going to be screening that film that got canceled. The film was called The Most Canceled Man in America. So you can get up to date on what I'm up to, events coming up, other projects I'm working on, my podcast and other writings at that Substack.
All right, excellent. I don't use Substack just because I've had a newsletter for so many years, and there wouldn't be any benefit of me trying to somehow corral everybody to move to another platform. But I love when people have a Substack. I love their approach, that they really let you say whatever you want to say. They're not going to shut you down. And I think it's a great business model too for the people who produce the content. So I'm glad you have. I did see at least one of your pieces already. So I'll put these links up at tomwoods.com/2146, our show notes page for today. Thank you, Jason, very much for your service.
Hey, Tom, thank you for what you do. Incredible that you've got over 1,200 episodes.
Excuse me, yes.
Yeah. You crossed over the 2,000 mark.
Because I know you were at the 2,000th episode, so I know you know the number.
Literally, I look at what you've done, Tom. It's incredible. It's taking incredible commitment to getting the truth out there and being consistent. Many people can't make it past 20 podcasts. And so you're doing great work, and I'll come on anytime. I appreciate the invite.
I believe you may have been 0.15% of the Tom Woods Show over the years. As I do the math in my head, I think it's somewhere in that neighborhood. That's not insignificant
not
for
at
an
all.
Entire podcast.
Not at all. I love it.
All right. Thanks, Jason.
Thanks, Tom, and I'll talk to you again soon.
All right, folks, that's our episode for today. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about the Bitcoin slaughterhouse and what's going on and what it all means and what we can expect in the future. So you're not going to want to miss that one. I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.